Every time a new system gets emulated at the Internet Archive, it's a cause for celebration. At this point, if it hasn't been emulated before, there are reasons why that hasn't happened. So the system is going to have some very unique properties. Such was the case with the newest system, the ZX81. And what it represented and how we did it is pretty intense indeed. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Let's start with the ZX81 itself. In America, it was called the Timex Sinclair 1000. This, objectively, was an inexpensive machine. You could buy it for under 100 American dollars, and you could buy it even more cheaply as a self-assembling kit, where the parts would come inside of envelopes and you would carefully solder them together to make your home computer. I have a strong memory of seeing this machine in a store at the mall, and it was right next to an Atari 400, and even at that point, I felt, why? Why would you choose that little black machine over this piece of beige beauty next to it? Nearly every point of data related to the ZX81 disappoints. It came with 1K of memory. It came with a keyboard that was a single membrane, where each key was smaller than your finger, and every key had multiple meanings and functions depending on what buttons you pressed beforehand or during. To expand the ZX81's minimal memory, you could buy a RAM pack, which would hang off of the back and, frankly, didn't attach very well at all. Enough that when I started to make noise about emulating the ZX81 in the archive system, so many people came forward to talk about RAM pack wobble with the hard laugh of a tired and fatigued warrior looking back. Most of the emulation at the archive comes as a result of MAME and whatever machines it's supporting and whatever new ones it starts to support. There are an entire range of machines going back into the past that I chose not to add to our system. And the reasons varied. Either MAME itself didn't think the support was complete, or the program required all sorts of special tricks just to run, and I wasn't sure if the audiences were prepared to make themselves go through hoops just to make a machine run. In emulation, and especially presenting emulation, you are constantly trying to balance between the reality of how everything worked and the ease that everyone expects in the modern era. Turning a 10-step process into a single button on an Internet Archive item usually means that people who would never take the time to try this software will at least give it a shot. The folks for whom these programs represent childhood memory or cherished stories of youth, they'll go through anything to get back to what they remember. And along the way, each hard step brings more nostalgia because you remember the difficulty of your childhood related to machines that were not designed for the impatience of a child. The ZX81 had a cassette interface, which meant a tape would be put into a tape machine, you would prepare it for the signal coming, and then you would press play on the cassette player while it read it into memory, and then executed it. What this meant, in reality, was after pressing play, you could wait 5 or 7 minutes for your very simple program to boot up, and sometimes it wouldn't run at all. You had to type run and hope for the best. In the ZX81 world, this appears to be the spell that drew a certain kind of person in, and it was a siren song and it was a siren song, meaning that what was at the end was going to be something very special. It all started when somebody commented to me that we weren't supporting the ZX81, and was there any particular reason why we weren't? I said I wasn't sure. I went over and looked at it, and I found exactly why I must have thrown up my hands 5 or 6 years ago. The fact that you had to type in a variety of keys and then press scroll lock and F2 and wait till just the right time to run the program meant I didn't want to dump that on anybody. When we supported the Commodore 64 with VICE, we had done some modifications so it was possible to have all of that done for you. The machine would start up, look for the cassette, do all of the loading, and then start the program. You didn't have to do anything but wait patiently. In fact, with the Commodore 64, there was an additional set of rewards for sitting through the cassette loading. Many of these programs, especially the professional ones, would have preload programs that would come in very quickly and give you little shows or games to play while the rest of it loaded from cassette. With the ZX81 rocking no sound, text only, and having no auto run in sight, I must have just given up. But something had clicked with the Commodore 64, and as I looked closer, I figured, why not give it a shot? What followed after that was about 8 days of work. Finding programs for the ZX81 wasn't difficult. We had many packs of them, and I found a really convenient one with about 1,100 different programs, ranging from games and applications to demos and education. It was a full gamut, if not the full library, enough that you would get a pretty good sense of what the ZX81 was about. Translating the unusual keyboard and then typing in the commands into a ZX81 was another day of work, looking up old websites, finding out how people had given each other hints on how to do it within emulators, and it came down to this. You'd load up the ZX81 until it was at the prompt. You would press the J key. This would be printed as load. Then you would type Shift P. This produced a quote. You'd press Shift P again, producing another quote, then press Enter. At that point, the system is trying to load from the cassette port, but there's nothing coming. You then have to press the scroll lock key. Yes, the scroll lock key. This would enact full keyboard mode, and then you would press F2, which was the MAME hotkey for press play on the loaded tape. At that point, the machine would start reading the signal from the non-existent virtual tape for anywhere between 1 and 7 minutes. At the end of that, nothing might happen. You would then have to type R for run and press enter. Other times it would boot up by itself. Then you'd have the program. And the programs ranged wildly in this collection. They would have mathematical conversion programs that would work beautifully inside of a textbook, right next to a full professional Pac-Man or Space Invaders clone that somebody had obviously been selling back in 1982. So we knew then that it worked, that it would all function if somebody typed the right keys. I loaded up 1,100 of these different items and then set about trying to figure out how to screenshot. What we discovered was that this beautiful screenshotting program that had been written for me by TrueMad couldn't handle delaying in between keys in the way that we wanted to do it. Because after all, after you did all of the loading commands, you'd have to wait 5, 6, 7 minutes, and then type the rest of the commands. TrueMad was asleep in his home country, and A. Schmitz came in the clutch, modified the screenshotter program to be able to handle it, and we had a functioning, working screenshotter. The next week involved screenshotting. Initially, I did the screenshotting on a machine at the Internet Archive, but I discovered, as I got greedy and wanted to run multiple screenshotting threads, that it was pushing the machine to the limit. Whatever was going on with emulating a tape load was taking up an enormous amount of CPU inside of the browser, so I could only run one or two threads dependably. That's when I remembered that I had a laptop at home that I had modified for Linux, and since all of these programs were extremely small, it was trivial to get it all running on my laptop, screenshotting away, and waiting, in each case, about 6 minutes to do a screenshot. Here, philosophically, a Zen outlook really came into focus for me. It was taking 6 to 7 minutes per title, and I had 1,100 titles to go through. I was able to set it up for 3 threads that were each going through different parts of the collection and doing this work. It was still going to take days, and some of them were going to fail. But I realized that the gift of the slow grind of these screenshotters meant that I didn't have to be there, that every day I could go in and look at the crop of what came out and be delighted at these black and white images and what people were doing with them. When you look out over the horizon of an entire culture of working around one machine, you see the highs, the lows, the experimentation, and since you have no preconceived notions, you're just letting screenshots go by. All of these screenshots become alive for you again, decades after they delighted others in the past. As I started posting the screenshots on Twitter, I found people coming to me with stories of their childhood, mentioning the RAM packs, telling me which titles represented the canon of the ZX81, the must-have items, and for them it was warm air breathing over a frozen landscape of memory. A week later, here we are, with ZX81 programs, adventure games, video games, applications, educational titles, and beautiful, small demonstrations of what the ZX81 considered graphics, ready to go at the Internet Archive, each one with a warning paragraph from me telling you which keys to hit to boot it up. There are ways to have skipped that loading process, that multi-minute screeching of loading into memory, but multiple times people told me that having that get set off and then going for a cup of tea and waiting for it to boil and coming back with your program being ready was a critical part of the ZX81 experience. And who am I to take that away from people? Completed for the moment, but never truly complete, we now have it all running, and I've begun a search to find all of the caches and descriptions and citations of ZX81 programs on the net to make sure that we're not missing anything canonical, to bring new titles in, to make the library as deep as possible. Because, like so many others, this little black square with its odd flat keyboard that I laughed at as a child represents, to an audience that I respect and care for, as a literal piece of their heart. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. No matter what machine it is, the most intense and enjoyable part of it all is having a program boot up where I have to ask myself, how are they doing this? And I'm pleased to report, without giving any spoilers, that there are dozens of programs within the ZX81 library that fulfill that requirement beautifully.